love that. All right, so tradition 12 in its long form reads, and finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessing may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And I give you Carrie B. from Bend, Oregon, here to discuss Tradition 12 with us this evening. Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks, Dee. Okay, yeah, I'm going to just get right into it because there is a lot to cover. Tradition 12 is, you know, one of the two bookends, right? Tradition 1 and Tradition 12. So I'm going to real quick, and my name is Carrie. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is New Horizons, and I'm currently working steps 10, 11, and 12. This is a huge, I'm going to read a lot, and I'm sorry for if you guys don't like, you know, people reading to you, I don't blame you, but there's so much good stuff about Tradition 12 that's so much better than anything I can say. I'm going to give you some literature references because it's just our literature on Tradition 12 is hands down probably the most thorough of any of our traditions. So I'm going to start with what we're all most familiar with, the 12 and 12. Not my favorite piece of literature that AA publishes on the traditions, but it's definitely traditions 1, 10, and 12 are the exception for me. Traditions 1, 10, and 12 are super clear in the 12 traditions, 12 steps and 12 traditions book for me. So I'm going to start by reminding you, you know, that we read tradition 11 last week, and tradition 11 is not our anonymity tradition. We went over that, right? It's our public information policy. And then tradition 12 is our anonymity tradition. What does tradition 12 mean in relation to the 12th tradition? What does anonymity mean in relation to the 12th tradition? Just real quick, go to your AA 12 traditions illustrated, right? Because this is the easiest, simplest, and most pure definition of anonymity that I've ever seen. So the 12 traditions illustrated pamphlet on the second to the last page, because it doesn't have page numbers. Anybody who wants to put in an agenda item, that would be a good one. So if you go to the second to the last page that is on the 12th tradition, there's a picture of a building. And on the side of it, it says anonymity. And then below the word anonymity, there's a definition of anonymity. And that's the one I'm going to use today. That's the one I always use for 12th tradition anonymity. It says sacrificing personal ambition for the common good. Oh, there we go. Okay. So Dee's showing you, it says anonymity is sacrificing personal ambition for the common good. That's the definition I'm using today for tradition 12. And that's the definition all of our literature uses. So I'm going to start with that in mind, okay, with that definition in mind, I'm going to start by reading in the 12 and 12 on page 184, that first paragraph, because it sums it up so good. The spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. You'd think it was humility, right? Nope, sacrifice. Because AA's 12 traditions repeatedly ask us, ask us to give up personal desires for the common good. We realize that the sacrificial spirit, well symbolized by anonymity, is the foundation of them all. It is AA's proved willingness to make these sacrifices that give people their high confidence in our future. So let's just a reminder, okay? In the beginning of this workshop, for those who weren't there in week one, I described the bookends, right? Tradition one, the goal, really the only tradition we have, unity. And then we have 10 traditions between these bookends that provide a specific tool, a specific way that I can protect, that I can help to protect the unity, right? So each one of the traditions asks me to give up something, to sacrifice a personal ambition for the common good, to sacrifice my need to know better than the group conscience, right? In tradition two, my need to not allow you in my group because I don't like who you voted for president, right? My need to all of these, every single, that's tradition three, you know, I can go through all of the different traditions and all of it is a something that I have to sacrifice in me for money, property, prestige, to be liked, to people please, all of this stuff for the common good of my group and for the common good of AA. All right. So we're on the same page now. I'm going to be talking about personal and group sacrifice. Why? Because if we turn to page 43 in the book, AA Comes of Age, again, I'm reading a lot today. I'm going to read the second to the last paragraph halfway down. Sorry if I'm not describing this very well, but about probably 12 or 13 lines up from the bottom of the page on page 43, I'm going to start. For the first time, I saw anonymity, for AA's anonymity, for what it really is. I realize I read this last week. I'm reading it again. For what it really is. What it really is in italics. It isn't just something to save us from alcoholic shame and stigma. Its deeper purpose is to actually keep those fool egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. It really means personal and group sacrifice. I want to say this again. It really means personal and group sacrifice for the benefit of all AA. Right then, I resolved to learn our 12 traditions by heart, just as I had learned the 12 steps. If every AA did the same thing and really soaked up these principles, we drunks could hang together forever. Now, sorry about this. This is really messy. I'm going back to the 12 traditions illustrated now, okay? If you guys can keep up. 12 traditions illustrated, tradition 12, first paragraph. Okay, I'm going to skip around a little bit. And this is just because this literature is amazing. Anonymity, as we observe it in AA, is at root a simple expression of humility. When we use the 12 steps to recover from alcoholism, we are each trying to achieve real humility, to put our self-respect on a solid base of truth rather than on fantasies about ourselves. When we use the 12 traditions to work together in unity, we are all trying to achieve humility as individual members, right? Personal and group sacrifice. Remember this. As individual members, by recognizing our true place in AA, and as a fellowship, by recognizing our true place in the world. So what is our group sacrifice? AA sacrifices the arrogance, the egotism to be all things to all people. Our true place in the world, what does that look like? Well, for starters, we're not doctors. The medical society is there, and they're there for a good reason. We don't play doctors. We help drunks to recover from alcoholism. The politicians are there, and they're there for a good reason. They fight things like all the things that they're fighting right now. And thank God they do it. But guess what? We don't do it in AA. We help drunks to recover from alcoholism. The clergy is there, and they're there for a good reason. They save souls. We save lives. The clergy is there for a good reason. We're not religious. We don't do that. The judicial system is there, and they're there for a good reason. They sentence people to 90 and 90. We don't. They're there for a good reason. And you guys hear me with love in my heart. The treatment facilities are there. And they're there for a good reason. We're not the treatment industry. And lastly, and this is the one I see that we lack humility as a fellowship in. Other 12-step fellowships are there, and they're there for a good reason. We don't pretend we have the cure for drug addiction. We don't pretend that we have the solution for an eating disorder. We don't pretend, I could go on, but they're there for a good reason. And it's not very humble to think that we could be all things to all people. And my service sponsor says something that I love. He says that we're a tall building, right? A skyscraper. We're that effective, but we're thin. We don't cover a whole lot. And that is our entire fellowship's humility. We sacrifice the need to be all things to all people. I'm going to just talk real briefly about false humility. Now, if anybody doesn't know what false humility is, please, please, please don't ask a member of AA. Look it up. Look it up in a dictionary. Look it up online. Do not ask your fellow member of AA. So I'm going to be using the definition of what false humility means in the dictionary, not according to other AA members, just for clarity on this. Now, there's a lot of false humility that I see in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hear things, people say things like, and I was guilty of it, and I can still be. I can still be, because I don't always know how to sacrifice my personal ambition for the common good. And that's what Tradition 12 asks of me. And so false humility is when I share, and I'm sure that everyone's in this room has heard it shared. Oh, the longer I stay sober, the less I know. Okay, I'm sorry, but that's false humility. The longer I stay sober, in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more experience I have and the more I know. One of the other things that I have seen in Alcoholics Anonymous that I am guilty of, I'm guilty of it, okay? You know, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I can say that today. But for the longest time, I was super worried that that sounds arrogant. And I was worried about what you would think of me. And I was worried about what people would think if I quoted the big book in a meeting. And, you know, I was putting my self-centered fear in front of carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God that somebody who didn't have that self-centered fear identified themselves as a recovered alcoholic from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. And yeah, offended the hell out of me at first, I'll admit. And I went up to him after and I called him out on it. And I said, so you think you can drink like a normal person with impunity, huh? And he kindly sacrificed his night out being taken out to dinner with the committee to sit there with little old me and go through the big book and describe what the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is. And it's people like that, with that kind of sacrificial spirit, that I don't think have false humility in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that there's a big difference between false humility and humility. Another thing that I can tell you is I have had the pleasure, I'm not going to say honor, but I have had the privilege of going some places and traveling in AA and you know, sharing about something I love, which is the traditions. And getting on an airplane and hanging out with you guys and stuff. And when I first started going out of town to do that stuff for a little while, I would tell my group and I would lie. I wasn't trying to lie, but I would tell my home group that I was visiting family, or I would tell my home group, you know, and I wouldn't bring sponsees with me. And usually if I'm going out of town to a conference, I got a car full of sponsees, right? Or a plane full of sponsees. Like, I like to do this stuff together. And somebody finally pointed out, why don't you have your sponsees with you at this conference? And I said, well, because I'm a main speaker and I don't want to, you know, and that's false humility. It was told to me, I shouldn't be ashamed of doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially to those at my home group and I need to be an example of saying yes, of getting on the plane. No, I don't need to brag about that stuff, but to hide it and to lie and say, I'm going out of town to see family instead of to carry the message is false humility. I was at a, you know, we had the Central Oregon speaker meeting in Central Oregon was the speaker seeker, the committee, I don't know. I don't think they think a whole lot of me, but they do know that I have some connections or whatever. Well, I remember, it was about 5-6 years ago, they wanted Clancy to speak. And so they asked me, you know, if I would take care of that. And I said, well, on a couple conditions, I'll take care of that. If you let me be in charge of what the flyer looks like, be in charge of, because I've seen what they do with the flyers. Right. And my service sponsor is big on this too. We want to promote, the principle, not the person. Right. And so, so we get Clancy, he's coming over, they send me this flyer to approve, and it's Clancy I from up in the sky. And it's like, no, that's not gonna. Oh, and they were asking me a sobriety date because they want to put Clancy I from up in the sky with 55 years of sobriety. Like, nope, sorry, it's gonna have to be Clancy I from the Pacific group. And you know, that's, isn't that what you put on all the other flyers? I don't want to see a flyer and see like some circuit speaker's name and, you know, this person who wrote a story in the big book or this person who's a circuit speaker. What I want to know so that I know to send my sponsees and the people that take direction from me, that take suggestion from me to that meeting, is I want to know, I don't care what the sobriety date is. I don't care if they've been sober for 40, 50 years. I don't want to see that on a flyer. That's not humility. You know why? Because I've seen people with 30, 40 years drink again. Do you know what I'm pretty sure that what it says on the flyer, if it says on the flyer that they're a member in good standing of a home group and it states their home, that they have a home group, you know, maybe that they sponsor others. That tells me that they're going to carry a message that I want my sponsees to hear. Not just some big shiny name. Not that they're, you know, that they're a celebrity in AA, but that they have a home group, they work steps, and that they sponsor others. Meaning they're an actual member, right, of Alcoholics Anonymous. That they're an active member. Because chances are, if somebody has a home group and is an active member of a group and sponsoring others, they're not going to end up drunk tomorrow, whether they have 2 years, 20 years, or 40 years. But just the fact that you have a few decades of dry time, that doesn't tell me anything. So these are all things that, you know, that, and I'm just going to, so I have 2 minutes left. So what I'm going to do with my 2 minutes left is I'm going to read, and I don't think I read this part last week. I think that I saved it for this week, but I'm going to read something out of the book, Pass It On. I don't usually study traditions how to pass it on, but it's part of our history. And it's on page 214, if I remember right, 214, I think, or is it 114? Yeah, 214. So this is Bill Wilson. No, it's not. Can somebody correct me? Is it 114? Is it 314? Maybe it's 314. Let me go to 314. Okay, 314. So this is in the book, Pass It On. Now this is a sacrifice that Wilson made to set a precedent for us. Now this sacrifice happened to be about anonymity, but we could go down every single one of the traditions and utilize this same principle. Okay. How many of us have heard the phrase in AA and the saying in AA, well, we should do this because if he could even save one life, Wilson says it doesn't matter. The principles of these 12 traditions come before saving one life and might even come before saving many lives. So let's read what Wilson says. When Time magazine wanted to put Bill on its cover, that is, put the back of his head, right? Not breaking anonymity, the back of his head on the front of the magazine, Bill declined and declined the cover story as well. He reasoned, for all I know, a piece of this sort would have brought AA 1,000 members. possibly a lot more. Therefore, when I turned that article down, I denied recovery to a lot of alcohol, to an awful lot of alcoholics. Some of these may already be dead, and practically all the rest of them, well, we may suppose are still sick and suffering. Therefore, in a sense, my action has pronounced the death sentence on some drunks and condemned others to a much longer period of illness. But I went well over on the conservative side because the requirements of peace would have tended to create a clear and colorful picture of my, a public image of me as a person. This would have created in the future, for the future, I'm sure, a temptation in our power driving people to get like pieces, presently with full names and pictures. For this reason, here it is. I estimated that it would be better for some to die and others to suffer rather than to set such a perilous precedent. Therefore, I declined the publicity, and I must confess it wasn't easy. The moral of the story, tradition one always trumps the rest. The group has to come before any one individual, or in this case, before any thousand of individuals. The welfare of Alcoholics Anonymous, these principles, these 12 traditions, which are a whole nother set of principles, for me, I have to remember them when I want to say my case is different. My group's message is so amazing because we read directly out of the big book that we can publicize on YouTube. Oh yeah, is it okay for every other group to publicize on YouTube, including those who might read out of, I don't know, Living Sober or whatever? No? Okay, then it's not okay for my group to do it. We are one among many. Is it okay for me because I live in a small town? And because our message is so good that we take a non-alcoholic drug addict in because there's no NA? No, we have to put these principles before the personal, my case is different. So that's what tradition 12 means to me. Thank you so much for allowing me to participate in these past 12, 13 weeks. And I really do cherish and love so many people in this room. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carrie. And please go ahead and you can begin typing your questions to Carrie on Tradition 12. We're going to move into Concept 12 with Billy. And it reads, general warranties of the conference in all its proceedings. The General Service Conference shall observe the spirit of the AA tradition, taking great care that the conference never becomes the seat of perilous wealth or power, that sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve be its prudent financial principle, that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others, that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible, by substantial unanimity, that no conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement to the public controversy, that though the conference may act for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, it shall never perform any acts of government, and that like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in thought and action. And I give you Billy N. from Palm Beach Gardens here in Florida. Thank you, Billy, for being with us.
Thanks, Dee. Billy Alcoholic. Welcome, everyone. And thanks, Carrie. And I know it's the last night, so I just want to thank everyone who's been with us for this time. I also just want to mention that, you know, as Carrie was talking about Tradition 12, it made me think a little bit. It's very easy to run into people, into AA, people who've been here a long time, who will argue with you that there is no need for the traditions or the concepts. And that's common. And it's going down that argument is a deep hole you want to stay away from. I'm just going to warn you. The only response that I've come across, and I am a person who I believe is reasonably practical, that I believe everybody needs to go through the traditions and have experience with the traditions, and it's not the same for the concepts. I'm not saying it won't help you, it won't benefit you. But I will say this to anyone who says this, and a lot of times, just so we know, they don't appear as the person who's saying meeting makers make it sitting in the back row of your local clubhouse, the people who say we don't need the traditions. Often not. They are people armed with the facts in the first 164 who know the book better than I'll probably ever know it, truthfully. I just want to just pass something on to you that was passed on to me that has helped me when dealing in those situations is a simple question to the person who really believes that. And that question is, on the day you went to your first AA meeting, what would you have done if AA didn't exist? Where do you think you would be today? That is the question to leave with them. That on the day they got sober, and maybe they went to their first meeting 2 days later, whatever. But however they got to their first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it was by an intergroup phone call, or an employee assistance counselor, or a drug court judge, or whoever directed that person, the simple question to ask them is, where would they have gone if there was no AA? If AA had stopped to exist 40 years ago? And where do they think they would be in their life today? Because the message we have to get across is not about being an expert on any of the spiritual principles, but the message of our sacred duty is to be here tomorrow for the alcoholic who's not here yet, because we're already here. And my experience has been is even some of the most dogmatic, fundamental big book thumpers who hate the traditions, that if I can get them to think about where they would have went if there was no AA, or where their life would be today if they didn't get to go to that first meeting and meet their first sponsor and get their first big book, that thought helps to thaw out some of the ice about the principles that have kept us here and kept the light on. So the 12 warranties, the only thing I really want to read is the third paragraph on page 60, because it's an important one. And it says, but Article 12 of the Conference Charter stands in a class by itself. So it's almost, I guess, almost eerie, like what Bill says about Tradition 12 and AA Comes of Age, that no principle is more important to the survival of our fellowship than that. And here, Concept 12, which is Article 12 of the Conference Charter, Article 12 of the Charter stands in a class by itself. An amendment or cancellation of any of its vital warranties would require the written consent of 3/4 of all the directory listed AA groups who would actually vote on any such proposal. And the considered time of 6 months is allowed for careful deliberation. Although changes in the warranties of Article 12 thus have been made difficult, they have not been made impossible. It is clear that all of these warranties have a high and permanent importance to AA's general welfare. This is why we believe we should permit change in them only upon positive evidence of their defectiveness, and then only by common consent of the AA group themselves. We have ranked them, therefore, with AA's 12 traditions, feeling that they are quite as important to AA's world services as the traditions are to AA as a whole. So in other words, this is saying Concept 12 is as important as the 12 traditions. That's how important it is. So if we go through them one at a time, the General Service Conference shall observe the spirit of AA tradition, taking great care that the conference never becomes the seat of perilous wealth or power. Obviously, the conference later on, we talk about making government actions, but perilous wealth is a problem for all alcoholics, for all intergroups, for all convention committees. We're a strange lot on many levels. I think we could all agree. But we are one of the few probably groups of organizations in the world where too much money is actually worse for us than too little money. We want to be self-supporting. We want to pay our bills. But we are horrible when we have too much money. And that's why we're very clear on what we do with our money. That sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve be its prudent financial principle. It's pretty funny when you read the narrative and you think about the last 2 years. I mean, who would have known when this was written? You know, who would have known 80-something, 70-something years later that would be a global pandemic where AA would basically shut down as far as meetings in usual locations? I don't think anyone ever thought that something like that could happen unless it was really the end of the world. But other than that, no one really thought that we would all be stuck in our houses. And if you read the narrative about, you know, sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve, and if you talk to maybe some past delegates or past trustees, they'll tell you that it's common to run into people in the fellowship who would say, why does the board have so many millions of dollars? Why does the board hoard money? Why do we need all that money? And it's very important before we get into the need to talk about how we handle that money and really what makes us different than almost every other nonprofit. Let's just use $15 million as an example. I'm just throwing that out. Our budget every year is about $15 million. So $15 million is give or take 12 months expenses. But just take $15 million that we have that in the bank. The average organization, what they would do with that $15 million is use it to fund current activities. I'm just going to throw 10% out as a, you know, general investment guideline. A lot of people would like to make 10% on their investments every year, safely 6 to 10%. But let's just say 10. 10% of $15 million is $1.5 million. That's what you could make in interest on $15 million a year if you made 10% on investments. And what does AA do? Number one, we don't allow the current year to be funded by money in the reserve fund. That's why we changed our name. See, if we allowed the interest and investment of the reserve fund to fund the current year, we would then be an endowment. We would have an endowment. We would be a foundation. We don't allow that. And just so we're not tempted, because that's another thing, I'm sure there's a lot more spiritually healed people in this room, but alcoholics are not good with temptation either. That's another thing. Add temptation to money or any other problem you have, and it's a problem. And so how do we guard the temptation of becoming a foundation or an endowment? We do not allow that money to be invested in usual ways. In fact, there's only three categories of money in the reserve fund. First one is cash, money that is actually in a bank account. The second one is UST bills, treasury bills. I don't know if you know, but the interest you make on a treasury bill is like nothing. The third is what's called a CDAR, a certificate of deposit account record. For those of you that might be familiar with the FDIC guarantees your bank accounts. That's why your group uses a bank account. That's why you use a bank account. And that's why you want to see that FDI sticker on the door. You want to make sure that if your bank goes out of business, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is going to come back and give you your money. CDs don't pay a lot of interest either. All a CDAR is if you're over that $250,000 limit, your bank will spread it out amongst a bunch of banks so that it's covered. But those are the only three things we do with the reserve fund. Now, the pension fund is different because that's governed by laws where you have to invest and you have to make certain returns and watch out on it. But it's critical to understand the relationship between the seventh tradition and this warranty, that we are not a foundation or an endowment, that that money does not sit there so that we can use it to fund current activities. There's a section of the service manual, I won't read it, but you can look it up. And it describes when the reserve fund should be used. Natural disasters, emergencies, something that could shut down AA. And thank God, as a result of this concept, and that's why I say, imagine AA went away. Imagine there were just pockets of us around after COVID, but meetings never came back. The office didn't survive. There's nobody else publishing, printing literature. There's nobody answering emails at the office from committees around the US and Canada. Where would alcoholics today be going? The very thing that has allowed AA to stay alive is the 12 traditions and is the 12th concept. The next one, that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others. I've gone back to the bylaws of the General Service Board many times. I probably have a paperclip because I go to it so often. What page is it in the old service manual? I can call this now. It's page S114 in the old service manual, not the new service manual, but it's the second page of the General Service Board's bylaws. And right after where the 12th step is listed, there's a line about the trustee's duty to protect the traditions. But then there's a one sentence paragraph to make sure that the bylaws of the General Service Board don't run opposite of the 12th concept. And I'll read it to you. Members of the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous are hereinafter referred to as conference delegates. So what does that mean? That means that those 135 people that get together every May, sometimes in April, May, they're all equal. I've gone to 10 General Service Conferences as a voting member. Two as a delegate, four as a non-trustee director, and four as a trustee director. All 10 times, I was a delegate. It's just that we throw around the delegate word only talking about area delegates. At the General Service Conference, everybody is supposed to be equal. No one should be put in a position of authority over others. Now, does that always happen? Of course not. There are some times when, and I don't see it in my experience, in my 10 conferences, I don't see it really done by the board that much. I see it done more by area delegates who seem to put more emphasis and faith in maybe something a trustee or a director or a staff member shares than another area delegate. And those trustees and staff members are not supposed to be in a position of authority over anyone else at the conference, in a position of unqualified authority. Everyone is simply supposed to be one vote, equal. The only thing that is unequal is concept one and two, as carried out in concept four, which is the classification of types of voters. So when I was a delegate, an area delegate, my one vote was equal to Greg M's one vote as a general manager. Our individual votes were equal. However, I was part of the classification that 70% of the conference, the AA groups are represented by 93 delegates who make up over two-thirds, almost 70% of the voting members. So when it comes to classifications, the conference charter in Concept 1 left AA to the groups. And that's why the groups as a group have 70% of the voting members. But when it comes to individuals, we're all one-on-one. It says that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by substantial unanimity. I've never been part of a decision at a conference that was not substantial unanimity. There is a section of the service manual that says that the conference votes in a majority. It should be a suggestion to the General Service Board. In my maybe not so humble opinion or humble opinion, I think that's something we've ignored for way too long. That's a place where the board has kind of said, unless the conference votes two-thirds, we're not going to do something. But the charter actually says the opposite. The charter makes clear that if a conference votes in majority, it should be a suggestion to the General Service Board. And that we have long discussions and we don't rush things. That's another thing. So we've already gone through too much money is a problem for alcoholics. Temptation seems to be a problem for a lot of alcoholics. And then what about the good old quick shoot from the hip snap judgment? Another thing that a lot of us seem to be able to carry off pretty quickly. It's not good for AA. Long discussions, informed discussions. And I would challenge anyone that the discussions that take place at the General Service Conference and the votes that take place there should be no different than the paragraphs about the informed group conscience in the AA group pamphlet. They should be the same. I would say they should even be more informed, but they should at least be the same. Should we rush things through a General Service Conference? Would we do that at a group? I don't think so. Sometimes I think taking no action is one of the best AA things we can do until we really are all convinced that action needs to be taken. No conference action should be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy. So let's go with personally punitive first. And let's talk about the word punitive. I'm going to use the U.S. court system as an example. If somebody harms you, whether physically, like hit you in a car accident and you got hurt, or maybe commercially, maybe you own a business and another business did something to harm your business. When you go to court, you're allowed to get compensatory damages. Those are to make you whole. But punitive damages are different than compensatory damages. Punitive, if you look it up, I'll just give you a couple of definitions, is inflicting or intended as punishment. Inflicting, involving, or aiming punishment, severe punitive measures. So sometimes we hear this taken way out of context in AA service. And I'm not even talking about service at the board level. I'm talking at your good old home group where your coffee maker hasn't shown up for 3 weeks. and you're the horrible person that says at the business meeting, we better elect a new coffee maker. And you know what's coming from the corner of the room. You know what's coming. You are now responsible for maybe making that person leave AA and drink. That is that you are the most evil person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would tell you that's not punitive. That's well in line with tradition one. It's well in line with what the service manual says about what do you do with a GSR or a DCM who doesn't show up. It's well in line. Here's what would be punitive. Let's say you had an area secretary who didn't show up for two assemblies in a row. And let's say you remove that secretary. If you have an area newsletter and you wrote an article with a big headline that said, you know, Billy N removed his area secretary, didn't show up for two assemblies in a row, that would be punitive. That would be inflicting pain. That would be intending to punish. Instead, we deal with just the solution, not the punishment. The same goes for the dreaded stealing AA money, where I refer back to the big book. The big book is very clear. There are some amends you make where you may have to go to jail. Period, end of sentence. It does not have an asterisk or a footnote that says, however, you can steal as much money from AA as you want. I just want to say this. It's up to the group or the district or the area to decide what to do in that situation. It's none of anybody else's business. But it's definitely not against the warranty. I noticed today that there was a country in celebrated in box 459 and the new one that came out for its AA anniversary. A trustee from that country went to prison for stealing money from the General Service Board. An area in the Northeast region a couple of years ago, a treasurer was sentenced. There are many situations that are sometimes out of our control. There are situations where the government says that if you're a nonprofit and an officer steals, you have to report it. If an officer embezzles money, it's not a choice. In many states, that's the law. All I'm trying to say is this is one of those things that gets twisted like, oh, you can't do that. It also says no conference action should be an incitement to public controversy. And remember, the General Service Board is the active service arm of the conference per conference concept six. So things like litigation, things like responding to newspaper articles, we just don't do that. In fact, the book talks about we privately talk to people or we have our friends talk to people, our non-alcoholic friends. And then it says that though the conference may act for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, it shall never perform any acts of government. And that like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in thought and action. So democratic in thought and action. We can't just say it's democratic. The actions of the conference have to say it's democratic. This year's General Service Conference started off by an amends from somebody who chaired part of the conference last year because that person ruled something out of order that they probably shouldn't have. No one individual has the rule to rule a conference committee's report out of order. And I give a lot of credit to the person for making amends this year at the start of the conference. It's super important, but we're not a government. We're just not. We have a lot of literature at the General Service Office. Some might say we have too much. We can leave that debate for another day. However, you know what we don't have? The lighting requirements for your parking lot. We don't have a pamphlet for that or even a guideline. You know, we're not into lighting requirements. We also don't have fire code requirements. We also stay away from lots of other things that are just none of our business. And we don't send out directives. We share experience. We don't tell people you can't, because most often it's an improper statement. First of all, if you tell an alcoholic they can't do something, I'm going to tell you they're going to do it, whether you like it or not. They're going to find a way to do it. What we do is share experience. And the tough thing about this is that it's like a sponsee in a diner. It's like a sponsee who is telling their sponsor of this great idea they've had. And the sponsor tells the sponsee, you know what? I had that great idea once. And boy, did it turn out bad. Really, really bad. And the sponsee sits there in front of the sponsor and says, thank God you told me that. But we're dealing with us. And what happens to us? By the time that person gets up from the table and is grabbing a toothpick from the counter while they're paying their bill in the diner, they've already said to themselves, I'm smarter than him. That's not going to happen to me. It's going to be much different for me because I'm smarter. And unfortunately, that's just human nature. That's not alcoholic nature. That's just human nature. But that's why we share experience. And you know, when it comes to groups that are, or people in AA who are out of control, I would just tell you that just look at them like yourself. Are you a person who learns from the first mistake you make and you never make it again? Or do you have like a dent in the side of your head because you've banged your head against the wall, making the same mistake 45 times? And on the 46th time, you said, wow, maybe I shouldn't do this. It's the same with groups and people in AA. But we don't make rules. We stay far away from rules. So thanks for having me out. I wish everyone, I just want to remind everyone, we're going into January. The conference agenda will be out in February. Your groups will be getting together and your districts and your areas. And this will be an in-person general service conference. So far, as we know right now, first time in 2 years, there could be some really important things on the agenda. So do your part, even if you're not a GSR, to allow your GSR some time to talk to the group and let the group know what's going on. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Billy. Thank you so much, Terry. Wonderful stuff, guys. Good job. I had laughed and cried kind of all in the same token. So stalling for questions. Terry, did you get any yet? Please send your questions to Terry on traditions, Billy on concepts. It is the last night, so if you have any on any of the traditions or any of the concepts, please, now is the time to ask as we round out the end of this workshop tonight. So I'm going to again stall by telling you that I have your attention. Wednesday, December 22nd, 8 p.m. Eastern, we are going to begin American Sign Language Interpreted New Service Manual Study. So that new service manual study that just came out, the new service manual in November, we are going to have American Sign Language Interpretation, ASL interpreted, for 13 weeks. That starts Wednesday's December 22nd. It'll run from 8 p.m. Eastern. I don't know, we said 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. to 9:30, Billy. We're going to do an hour.
I forget what we said.
Okay, we'll see how that goes. I don't remember what was on that flyer, if we even put it in an end time. So anyway, do you guys have any questions yet? In the chat, I've got none that have come to me. So you've done such a good job. You've covered it all. Nobody has any questions.
I have a couple.
All right, go ahead, Billy.
Okay. Would you say asking someone to step out of a service position they are either not doing correctly or simply not showing up for as punitive action? No. No. And no. Let's see. How can we approach the problem of non-alcoholics who are misled to believe they can become AA members, climbing our service structure? I think it would be difficult to challenge a charismatic and capable person's claim to membership while they skillfully act against the best interests of Alcoholics Anonymous, by encourage multi-purposes from a position of authority. That is a great question. Listen, every alcoholic is a member if they say they are. But sometimes, and I'm going to go a little off the reservation here, that's not popular in service, but I'm going to just give you an example. When I was on the nominating committee for AA World Services and the General Service Board, and we interview non-trustee director candidates, one of the things that bothered me about the questions is they were all service related. Like, what about, what's your home group? What service position do you hold at your home group? How often do you go to your home group's business meetings? What does your regular AA day-to-day life look like besides service? And the reason I say that is, in a lot of areas, it's very common that the person gets 2 minutes to tell you why they should be delegate or alternate delegate. And usually there's a period of time to ask questions. Now, you could look bad if you ask a question. I'm not saying that somebody won't come down on you. But you know what you could do? If your area has a policy where they get 2 minutes to talk about why they should be elected, maybe somebody should make a motion that says 1 minute should be about service and 1 minute should be about their day-to-day AA life. Like, you have the power to elect these people or not elect them. But we should know who we're electing. And we have other problems. We have people who get so involved in service, they're not on the front lines of Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. They're not. I got in trouble in the Northeast region because somebody said on the Northeast Regional Delegates meeting that they didn't have time to sponsor because they were a delegate. And when a service sponsee of mine told me that, I was like, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard. Like, that's not good for AA. So yes, do some non-alcoholics probably hold some service positions? Yes. But let's change the way we elect people. Let's not just care about, were they a great treasurer? Or were they a great alternate delegate? Like, let's put personal recovery into that and being a member of a home group and being active in AA. So that's the only thing. I saw another question I had here. On page 72, let me go to it because you know this person thought about this question if they've already quoted a page number. On page 72, warranty 6 reads, in action and in spirit. Does spirit mean the same as action? I don't think so. If you're asking me what I think, I think action is clearly action and it should be democratic. But there's certain ways you could act that don't require a vote, that don't seem very democratic. We have nepotism in AA. I hate to say it, but that's not in the spirit of being democratic in thought and action. You know, when an intergroup committee is dominated by the sponsees of like 2 or 3 people, that shouldn't be that way. That's not the spirit of democratic in thought and action. Some would argue that at a certain point in time, certain regions have controlled a good part of the General Service Board or AA World Services. I might have even thought that once or twice. But if all of a sudden people on the board are only picking people from their region to replace them, that's not really in the spirit of democratic in action and thought. So I don't think it's the same, but I think every decision we make, whether it's a vote involved or not, has to send a message about, you know, do we honor this warranty or don't we?
Thank you, Billy. Any more questions, either one of you? Carrie, did you get anything? Carrie, you're pretty quiet. Wow.
I'm going to say, let's see. So what government actions were the drafters concerned the board would undertake? Was parking lot lighting the example? Well, I think the actions that they were concerned about were things like dictating how groups should operate. Or, you know, how much talk have we had the preamble lately, where a lot of people have learned that the preamble wasn't even written for AA, right? It was written for people outside AA. But what about if you started a new group and we sent you a letter and said, okay, this is how it has to be. You have to open with this prayer. You have to read the preamble. You have to read how it works. You have to have an interim sponsorship announcement. Then you're allowed two speakers, some discussion, and you'll close with the Lord's Prayer. We don't do those things. The conference stays away from dictating what groups or assemblies or districts should do. So that would be my real example.
I got one finally, but it's okay. I'll go ahead and answer this. It says, what did he just mean? I don't know why they're not asking Billy, but what did he just mean by the preamble was not written for AA? Well, I'm going to read some of the preamble to you, and I would encourage everybody to listen to the language. So the preamble was written by a Grapevine editor when we first started kind of wanting to use Grapevine as a way to carry the message in CPC and PI, cooperations with the professional community and public information, and starting to, you know, want to leave Grapevines in doctor's offices and stuff like that. And unless you're in AA, like, you don't know what AA is. And so the preamble was written by a director at the Grapevine to tell outsiders, non-members, what we are and what we do. And so it's no wonder why we started reading it in open meetings, is because, again, open meetings are our showcase so that we can invite non-members of the professional community or family members to AA to show them what we do and what we don't do, what we are and what we are not. So I don't know if you guys know, like, the forward to the second edition, or a lot of groups read that instead of the preamble. And that says, we of Alcoholics, or even chapter 5, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are, right? Or that's in the we, right? We are writing to other alcoholics. Now the preamble says Alcoholics Anonymous, not we are. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other so that they may stay sober and help other alcoholics to. So the whole preamble is written from a non-alcoholic perspective to other non-alcoholics. We just don't know our own history, unfortunately. And so it's kind of been adopted by even closed meetings, which makes zero sense because it's written for the non-alcoholic by the non-alcoholic to inform the non-alcoholic of what we are and what we are not. But we're so used to being just hearing stuff in meetings that we just, unfortunately, you know, and this is why somebody I look up to always says, how do we know where we're going is if we don't know where we've been? And this is where our history is very important. And the history behind what we read is very important. Thanks.
Absolutely beautiful. Billy, any more from you?
All good.
Okay. I thought maybe you were checking some. All right. Well, then let's go ahead and close. I want to say thank you to both of you again so much for the 13-week commitment to be here. I cannot say enough. I'm not blowing you up, putting you on pedestals, but you guys are the people like you that show up and give back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you so much to make sure that it's here for the next generation, what you've already touched on. during the time you guys are here. So thank you so much. I love you both. Thank you. And thank you all that have been with us as well. Thank you. All right. So as it reads, I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thank you all for being here again.
And thanks, Dee, for doing this every week. Don't want to forget to thank you for doing this every week. Thank you.
Thank you again, Billy. It's been great with all of you guys. I'm going to meet you guys to say goodnight. And I'm going to say I'll see you Wednesday, December 22nd for our new service manual study. Real excited about that. Feel free to share it. I'll email you the information if you guys don't know how to get it out of the link, out of the chat. All right.
And can I throw out a little hint there?
Yeah.
Wherever you live, you probably have an accessibility chair.
Please.
In your district, your area, your inner group, make sure they see that it's in ASL. This is a big financial commitment to do it every week in ASL.
It's beautiful. Absolutely. Thank you so much. All right, guys. So you're unmuted to say goodnight if you'd like. Thank you again, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.